Film Spotting is brought to you by the new PeerFlix.com, a fun place to get movies for less.
What kind of a show are you guys putting on here today?
You're not interested in art?
No.
Well, look, we're going to do this thing. We're going to have a conversation.
From the Sundance Film Festival in Park City, Utah, this is Film Spotting. I'm Sam Van Halgren.
And I'm Adam Kempinar. It's time to check in with another edition of Sundance Dispatch. Tuesday, Sam, was our fourth day at the festival.
Right.
We saw five more films, one of which, we agree, is the best film we have seen so far.
That's right.
While another qualifies as the worst film we have seen so far.
Wait for it. We did. We saw Lo and Behold, which we saw because it was really the only screening we could get to at that time, based on our schedule this morning, about insurance adjusters in post-Katrina New Orleans. We also saw Son of Rambo, directed by Garth Jennings. It was one of the three films that I was looking forward to most in the festival. And Hound Dog, this film with Dakota Fanning, David Morris, Robin Wright Penn. Lots of buzz about this film at the festival in terms of its depiction of childhood sexuality and rape.
Yes, we then split up and saw two more films. I watched Zidane, a 21st Century Portrait, about the famous French soccer player, and you saw Crossing the Line, a documentary about the last American defector who is still living in North Korea after 40 years. We both loved one of those five films. Why don't you share with the class which one it is?
Yes, class. listen attentively. It was, I'm so happy to say this, the film, one of the three films I was most looking forward to, Garth Jennings' Son of Rambo, this wonderful film about this imaginative young boy, Will. He's growing up in this very religious home. He becomes friends with the badass troublemaker of the class, Lee Carter, and it's inspired by First Blood, they pair up and start making a film. It's about other things as well, but that's sort of the idea, sort of capturing this idea of adolescent play and youthfulness and making friends and taking a turn in your life in some way. I think the highest praise I can give this film is that it met my very, very high expectations. Garth Jennings, maybe not a name you're familiar with, but directed Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy adaptation, which came out in 2005. I've admitted this before. I would troll IMDb for information about Garth Jennings' next picture. And finally, here it is. There was something about his work in Hitchhiker's Guide. You didn't quite see it at the time, Adam.
No, I did not.
But there was something so playful about that movie. His use of puppetry, the wonderful musical sequences with the whales, or the dolphins, rather. And I just pegged him as like the next Michel Gondry, the next Spike Jones, had that kind of whimsical quality to him. And man alive, does it pay off here.
Yeah, it does. And it's funny because I didn't have the same reaction you did to Hitchhikers, though I liked it. I didn't love it nearly as much as you did, and I thought it was kind of odd, actually, that you had all this heaping praise for Garth Jennings, and then one of the first things I said to you, I think the first thing I said to you when the lights went up after the screening is, I owe you an apology. I mean, you clearly
right.
saw something
right.
that
if I had
I didn't.
Bought Garth Jennings stock,
yeah.
you know, in early 2005,
yeah, now
I'd
it's
be
going way
a gazillionaire.
Up.
Yeah.
yeah, and actually, we're going to talk about this later in the show, but you're going to get a chance to interview him, actually, on
yes.
Wednesday afternoon. I know you're looking forward to that, and I'm sure our listeners are looking forward to you just basically supplicating him for
15 minutes. Yeah, whatever he'll let me do.
Yeah, so
15 minutes. Yeah.
You know, this film, we have a lot to say
Remember
about it.
Remember that scene?
Yeah,
where
exactly.
Son of Rambo?
Because we really could
that was awesome.
Go off on that tangent and go on that road. But I think we want to save some of this discussion
yeah.
for actually
yeah.
Sunday's show, our
yeah.
big kind of Sundance wrap-up
right.
show that's going to be on Chicago Public
before
Radio.
Before we move on, I want to – one of our listeners suggested we talk about this, the fact that, you know, some of the films we're seeing at critic screenings, sort of private critic screenings, some which we're seeing at public screenings.
Uh-huh.
We saw Son of Rambo at one of these critic screenings, and we both had the same thought. I think you said it first.
Yeah.
Boy, I wish we had seen this at a public screening.
I know.
There's something, and it's strange. I was thinking about it later. I was like, what is the difference between a critic screening and a public screening? They're both human beings, aren't they?
Yeah.
But there is this kind of weird sense of duty, I feel like,
mm-hmm.
that a lot of people in these critic screenings, and there's certainly a lack of enthusiasm, and you hear it in the at the end of the film. They're still applauding it, which is
they
nice.
Are.
I mean, you don't get that at a regular screening, but there's no participatory quality to it in terms of laughter, and boy,
not
this film
much.
Would have been incredible to see with a big
yeah,
big audience.
I agree, and it was still worth pointing out
oh,
that,
yeah.
that the critics still did laugh at the film more than any other film.
Yeah.
We had the largest reaction to any other film that we've seen with critics. But I will just say before we move on about the film that I think, and you kind of touched on this, but I think it may be the best movie I've ever seen, or one of the best movies I've seen certainly recently, that captures that kind of revelry of youth and imagination.
Yeah.
and the influence that movies and culture can have
right.
on kids. And without going down too much of a nostalgic path here, but, you know, I was like this kid in many ways. I mean, I didn't get out a movie camera and I didn't make movies, but movies influenced me to want to imitate them just like they do here. And it's just hilarious. And it does make you kind of reminisce about your own childhood. At least we had that experience, certainly.
Well, I love what he does, too. He doesn't pretty up the movies that they make. It's like,
no.
That looks exactly
yes.
like the kind of movies we would have made when we were 12 years old. It looks, it's shoddy, you know, but
yeah.
it's like, it's full of that kind of imaginative mm-hmm. passion. And yeah, for me, it was my brother and I, 12 years old, it was Indiana Jones and the Temple of
exactly.
Doom. And it really brought me back
yeah.
to that, that it was a total nostalgia
but
ride.
Without,
yeah.
you know, we joked about it, without kind of saying line by line all the hilarious hilarious lines and the hilarious scenes in this
yeah.
film, and we're not going to do that. We're not going to waste your time with that. It's hard to really explain why this movie is so good and why it's
yeah.
so funny, but I have to add that the fact is, along with Garth Jennings, you touched on this, and the Hitchhikers debate we had a little bit, is that I just didn't see kind of the genius. I didn't see any
yeah.
kind of real spectacular quality to the whimsy that was there. It felt a little dead to me somehow,
mm-hmm.
or somehow dull.
Or whatever it is.
And
yeah.
then here, it's just everything about the way this film was made,
yeah.
and I'm talking about the filmmaking, the visual style of it, the dialogue, everything, it works. There's
yeah.
just nothing wrong with
yeah.
this film that I can find.
Well, it's such a personal film, too. I mean,
yeah.
of course, he's adapting and coming into this project with Hitchhiker's Guide, you know, where it's like he's maybe the 10th or 15th person that had been tapped to helm this this adaptation of Hitchhiker's Guide. There's this huge expectation
right.
involved in the adaptation of it with Douglas Adams and the love for that and the respect, and you can understand sort of
yeah.
the pressure he was under. I still found it, obviously,
mm-hmm.
really wonderfully whimsical, but with this project that he wrote and directed, it you know, it's very, for him, it's a very personal story,
mm-hmm.
very, you know, in terms of the way he grew up. And so, yeah, I think you can absolutely, it's a fair thing to point out.
Yeah. So that is the film Son of Rambo. So far, it's our favorite. And if you're listening to this and you're out at Sundance or you're coming, really, we can't stress enough.
Yeah.
Make an effort to go see it. A movie you maybe shouldn't make an effort to go see is the yeah. film Hound Dog.
And I don't know if we have this kind of power, but if we can recommend that nobody picks up for distribution.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
I mean, that's how strongly we reacted to it, unfortunately. and we did talk about later, and we feel bad for Deborah Campmeyer,
right.
the director of this film, the writer of this film, the producer. Clearly, this is something she's put her heart and soul in. She's wearing all
writer,
these different
producer,
hats.
Director.
Yeah, as I said. And the film is shot really well,
yep.
and you can tell that a lot of care went into it.
Yeah.
And it is getting a lot of buzz. A lot of people are in an uproar about the
yes.
fact that little Dakota Fanning, who's 12 or 13 or whatever, is in this film. She plays this Southern girl growing up in, do we even know where they are, Sam?
I want to say
frankly?
Alabama or
yeah,
something
maybe.
Like that.
And,
yeah,
maybe, and, you know, kind of the backwoods, dealing with a lot of issues with her sexuality, as
yeah.
you said, and her father, and his alcohol problem, and
yeah.
various other
abusive
things. It's hard to kind of describe the plot to the film, because there really isn't much of one. But there's a lot of buzz about it because of the fact that there is a rape scene
yeah.
in the film, and there are groups that are outraged about the fact that
yeah.
there is a rape of a 12-year-old girl depicted on screen. And one of the things we both thought immediately after we saw the film is the controversy shouldn't be about the fact that there's a rape scene in it, because it's handled as effectively and as neatly
yeah.
and as
yeah.
safely
yes.
as you could possibly
yeah.
do that scene. It's about 30
last
seconds
week I was
long.
Say tops, right.
It's not remotely graphic.
Right.
It is disturbing as hell.
Of course.
But it's not, as we said, graphic or really, you know, in your face about it. And that's not the controversy. The controversy should be that there's all this buzz about a film that's this
it's so bad.
And it's a companion, in a way,
yeah.
to Son of Rambo, where
yeah.
we talked about how we could sit here all day and just tell you kind of scene by scene all the funny moments and
right.
all the great things that work. And
right.
here, without you actually kind of just sitting there and watching this film for yourself,
where you begin.
It's really hard to explain
everything why is wrong with it.
It doesn't work.
Every
but there is
thing.
Just about and
yeah.
everything wrong with it. And I said to you later, the thing I kept asking myself throughout the film is, why am I watching this?
Yes.
What is the point?
Please give me
what
a reason.
What does the director
yes.
want me to know? Because what I'm watching is something that has absolutely no joy in the film at all. You are just watching basically misery, but it's misery without, in the end, saying anything profound.
Yeah.
And
it's not even coherent misery.
No,
it's not like
it's
one
not.
Scene of misery leads to another scene of misery coherently. They don't build on each mm-hmm. other. It's just like, here's another episode of misery, maybe even the same day. But the characters aren't even behaving in the same way. And it is this guise of, you know, she was shooting for the Southern Gothic quality. And maybe she thinks the rules of Southern Gothic are you can do or say anything. And people are going to buy the misery, and you throw in a little bit of metaphorical language about the power of snakes, maybe mm-hmm. people will overlook it. Well, we have not overlooked it.
No.
It's pretentious, it's exploitative, it's incoherent,
it is
awful.
And mainly, I think the word incoherent would be the big
really
one you would
so.
Focus on.
Really, yes.
It is. I mean, after a while, it starts out somewhat decently, and then after a while, you literally just start seeing scenes and moments of dialogue and exchanges between characters that seem like they almost could be out of another film.
Yeah.
You don't understand why they're there, and they're introducing brand new material that isn't building on anything we saw before.
Amazing.
And by the end of it, and this was a case where, this is another case where we said we wanted to see a public screening of Son of Rambo, we wanted to see a public screening of Hound Dog, because we couldn't imagine what the reaction to it would be, especially if the director was there.
Right.
Because a lot of times they are, and there's a Q&A afterwards and stuff. I wish we had seen that. All I can say is what happened at the press screening is it turned into a laugher.
It did.
It really did.
People were laughing.
You know what? That's fine. We're a bunch of cynical critics or whatever.
Sure,
but you know what? By the end of it, things became really funny. And unfortunately, you have a lot of really good performers doing things that we're laughing at. David Morse in this film, Piper Laurie reprising her role as Carrie's mom.
It was about time.
In the South, and is a drunk this time, in addition to being hyper-religious.
Unbelievable.
Really, it became funny. And another case, as it's happened a few times throughout the festival, where we just felt really bad for the people on screen.
On screen. And I did. I felt like I wanted to boo the film.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a rare feeling. We've talked about participatory cinema recently, Dreamgirls. I forget why else we were talking about it. But this was when I felt like I wouldn't be alone. I'd be like, we just needed one.
Yeah, it's
and
true.
And we might be able to boo the thing off the screen.
Yeah, so let's talk about
anyway.
Then, Sam, a film that neither of us find remotely pretentious, and that is
wonderfully
this film,
pretentious.
Lo and Behold. Yeah. And you had a stronger reaction to it than I did, so why don't you go ahead and run with it.
Directed by Zach Godchill, it's his directorial debut, according to some notes. I mean, he's a recent, I think, 2005 grad of, I believe it's USC Film School.
No, UCLA.
UCLA, okay, great. It is, as I mentioned at the top, about insurance adjusters in post-Katrina New Orleans, but what it really is an attempt on the director's part to use both documentary footage of the survivors of Katrina in New Orleans, as well as this story, this fictional story. What I really admired about it is just the instinct or the desire to want to make the film and the spirit with which it's made.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly, we're in post-Katrina. I think he's a Southern filmmaker. It's post-Katrina. You feel like he just wanted to get down there
mm-hmm.
and make a movie. And after a while, I started to think maybe he'd already shot some interviews with some post-Katrina survivors.
Maybe.
And then he was like, what kind of narrative could I build that would make a coherent story? And it's like, I know, I'll get some young kid who's got an uncle who's a claims adjuster down in New Orleans. He comes down and works with them for a couple months or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that way we can use the footage of the people talking in front of their abandoned, destroyed houses, and it fits right into the narrative. And it's got that kind of improvisational feel. And I think why it works, and like you mentioned, it's completely and utterly unpretentious.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't offer us any new insight into Katrina or the catastrophe that happened there. But still, the power of the emotions involved in that, in post-Katrina, the people that suffered through it, and the fact that some of the characters in the film are victims of it,
mm-hmm.
lends an emotional power to it. And again, without it being at all pretentious, it's not trying to tell us something deep about it. It's curious. It's got a curiosity about the place. And I have to say, I really admired it. Really liked spending time with the characters. And the performance, certainly the supporting performance of the festival, Eddie Rouse as this survivor who sort of joins up with our lead, our protagonist. I guess it's hard to describe what he is. He's like this working class, I think, Hispanic man who just meets up with our protagonist. Our protagonist is a little wary of at first. Thinks he might be trying to rob his car.
Well, he looks homeless.
Yeah, he looks homeless.
You know,
yep.
Disheveled, certainly dirty.
Yeah.
And maybe
ends
crazy.
Ends up sort of teaming up with him and spending the bulk of the film with him. And the time we spend with those two, largely due to the performance of Eddie Rouse,
yeah,
is just a lot of fun. I just really like spending mm-hmm. time with them. It has a real spontaneous yeah. kind of quality to it.
Well, it is because of the spirit of the film that you talked about, and as we said, the lack of pretension that makes me, you know, not want to be very harsh on this yeah. film, because it really is made with the best of intentions, and yep. it isn't even about Katrina. You know, I'm trying to be politically correct. It really is just the spirit in which the film was made. But watching it, I did think about a phrase that you'll hear Roger Ebert use sometimes, that Gene Siskel used to say, and I'm probably butchering it, I'm kind of paraphrasing, but it's something about Siskel would always ask himself when he's watching a movie, would I rather be watching, or would it be more interesting to watch a documentary about these people versus the story I'm seeing unfold? And, you know, and if the answer is yes, then maybe the movie isn't working or it's not good. Yeah. And I, in this case, have to say, Sam, that watching it, I felt like I would have been much more interested in watching a documentary about claims adjusters down in New Orleans and their experiences out among the people trying to make these claims, dealing with the problems, dealing with these people and their problems and whatever. That would have been more interesting to me than the fictional story that we get here, unfortunately. Yeah. And part of it, too, is that it's a very low-budget film, which is fine, but I think you can kind of see it on screen. And I feel like, you know, this is a case where Eddie Rouse aside, who is brilliant,
just
I'm with
brilliant.
You, it is. It's an incredible performance.
I mean, if anybody's seen George Washington...
Yeah.
He's also in that film.
He's
as
in
well.
It, but he is obviously a professional actor.
Yeah.
We haven't looked up the biographies of everyone else in the film, but it does seem safe to say that
early
most of the people in the film are either earlier in their careers or are non-actors. And sometimes that can work. It works amazingly well, for example, in The Pool, a movie we both kind of raved about on our last show. But the difference is Chris Smith is putting those people in situations where they don't really have to act.
No.
They get to just be themselves.
Yeah.
It's their lives for the most part. These people have to act. They're non-actors having to act, and you can tell that.
I actually liked
the
acting a bit more than you did. I'm not willing to chalk up their performances to those of non-professionals. I think it might be a combination of he was trying to capture an improvisational air, so maybe it's not entirely scripted.
Mm-hmm.
The lead probably hasn't had a lot of experience acting in film, but I actually liked him. I liked his character on screen. I just sort of liked him. And the uncle insurance adjuster is kind of hit and miss. I think he has really, really strong moments. There's a couple of really good scenes. A couple, maybe the director gave him a little too much leeway, and he took it and ran with it, and it didn't entirely work. But I think you're right. There is maybe an amateurish quality, some of the minor performances, but... overall,
there were just, for me, you know, a few too many kind of awkwardly staged
scenes
there
were some,
that you
could
tell were non-actors
and
the couple party scenes that just didn't work for me and took me out of it. And
despite
Eddie Rouse's great performance, we get to an end of the film, which does have some emotion to it, which does have some kick to it, even though I think we see it coming in large part as an audience. It does have a kick to it, and Eddie Rouse is incredible in that scene. And yet, for me, I wasn't as moved by it as I thought I would be or as I think the movie wants me to be because I wasn't moved by the whole film up
and
to that point.
And
I felt kind
too,
of like it didn't really earn because of the way some of those scenes with the non-actors didn't really work and some of the awkward scenes. It then offset the power of not only the end, but of also talking to the actual Katrina people.
Right.
It kind of undercut that for me a little bit. And I just never got into the film as much as you did.
Yeah.
But again, really respect the spirit behind the film without a doubt. So,
and lo and behold, it's one of those films, we've seen a couple of them with this festival, but this one stood out more so for me, where it's like, what happens to a movie like this? It's likely not going to get picked up for distribution. It'll probably play a lot of festivals, you know, throughout the year, maybe even 2 years. And I do hope people get a chance to see it. But I guess it's one of those scenarios where I'm happy I'm here to see films like this. And, you know, if a couple people are listening and they just jot this title down, I do think it's worth seeing.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Sundance plays any of these festivals.
On the channel.
But again, another, if there's any chance to check it out. I do think it's worth seeing.
Yeah, I do too. Okay, let's wrap up then with our last two movies. And we did split up for the first time of the festival. It was lonely, Sam, without
it was very
you.
Lonely.
I had no one to sit with. And
I couldn't finish my popcorn.
I
realized you usually have half.
Yeah, right. but we split up kind of because we wanted to see these two films and thought this would be one way to accomplish it.
Right.
But also, it was funny, you did over here, before we saw Bugmaster, you overheard a moviegoer the other night say to someone in front of us that the person who deserves an award here, some recognition, is whoever wrote the description for the movie Zidane, because
right.
it's just brutal, and yet it sounds right. like it's this
yeah.
amazing
film.
And it does, yeah, but they all do in the book,
yeah,
as
they
we
all
said.
Do, yeah.
And so that did sour you on it a little bit,
yeah.
and we should say that it is kind of funny how at Sundance you overhear things,
yes,
and it really does shape your perceptions, and everyone wants to know, what was the big movie you loved?
Well, you only have so much time, there's too many movies,
yeah,
you can't possibly see them all.
Give me a nugget, give me something to latch on to,
yeah,
to make
exactly.
me excited to go see something right. or not, and that kind of did sour you on the
it
film.
It did, yeah.
But I wanted to see it. And what it's about, you know, Zinedine Zidane, he's the French soccer player. He is now retired, but one of the best
mm-hmm.
soccer players ever, football for our European listeners.
Yes,
I'm
yes.
sorry, I'm going to call it soccer. And what happened was, it was a game in April 2005 between Real Madrid, his team, and Villarreal. And these two filmmakers had 17 cameras set up, mm-hmm. 35mm cameras set up to capture the action, basically focused on Zidane.
Yeah.
And you basically get to watch 90 minutes, a real-time
yeah, a full match.
Soccer
yeah.
match
right.
With the cameras focused on Zidane. And, you know, the thing is about soccer that watching it live, you know, whether it's these leagues like Real Madrid or the English Premier League,
yeah.
Come on, Sam, can I get a little come on, you Reds?
Okay, okay. Yeah,
you
sure
know how to
can.
Do it, right,
yeah.
Sam? No. But live soccer. For me, I'll take that experience I had
yeah.
when I was in London and watched
you
some club matches.
Anything,
I will put
it
up against
yeah.
any sporting yeah. event I've ever been to, maybe
even
the most exciting.
Even professional Chicago Blackhawks hockey.
Yes, even Chicago Blackhawks hockey. It really is that exciting. But like a lot of Americans, I hate
yeah.
to sound like the stereotype here, but watching it on TV,
brutal.
Not that exciting. It really is not for
but
us.
Hockey's boring on TV, too.
It is. You're right. Much better life.
It, yeah.
But watching a soccer match is not all that exciting for a lot of Americans,
right.
and I'm one of those people on TV. And then imagine watching a soccer match that's just focused on
one
player the entire time.
Yeah.
It gives you a sense of whether or not you may be interested in watching this film. And you know, the fact is, too, that the score of the game, the final score of the game, I'll tell you, is 2-1. So at most, you know
yeah.
you're going to see our hero,
yes.
our protagonist,
right.
make two great plays.
At
really,
best.
I mean, at best,
yeah, right.
you know, because the score is 2-1, which isn't to say he doesn't display an amazing amount of athleticism throughout the film
and
technique.
Yeah,
it's
sure.
all there. And, you know, they kind of take this cue where they use some of his own thoughts as subtitled text.
Okay.
Just him talking about growing up, playing soccer, and a few other things. It's not there enough.
Mm.
If they had a little more of it to spice up the action a little bit, it would have been more interesting. But their kind of cue is this idea of what he says about how when you experience the game as a player, it's all in fragments. And so here we get the audio all in fragments.
Yeah.
They might focus
oh.
on just his breathing
okay.
for a while. They might focus on the entire crowd. They might focus on you
yeah.
know the TV commentators. They
yeah.
they cut between that. They also kind of fragment the video because you get so many different
sure.
looks at what's going on and so many different perspectives. And so watching the 90 minutes of soccer, it can be kind of boring. Again, there isn't a lot of offense. That said, I do recommend the film,
yeah,
and I do think
right.
it is worth seeing, mainly because, and I know you agree with me here, at least in theory, I love the concept of what the movie's called, a 21st century portrait.
Right.
You think about what portraits were intended to accomplish.
Yeah.
You could, of course, try to paint a portrait of
right.
Zidane in action that captures him in all
right.
his glory. But in this age, in
yeah.
the digital age, in this media
right.
age, why not do something like this, where literally you can capture him doing every which way possible
yeah.
what he is known for, what
right.
he can do, and the majesty of that. And there is some majesty
yeah.
to it. And so with that
yeah.
in mind, I think it makes it worthwhile.
And so you might be saying that it's actually slightly more interesting than seeing an actual soccer match on TV.
It might be.
So,
no, it definitely would
so
be,
there you
I
go.
Would say.
All right.
But not better than a soccer match live.
Live, okay.
Okay.
Adam was seeing Zidane. I saw Crossing the Line, a documentary by Daniel Gordon. It is about James Joseph Dresnok, who defected to North Korea while a U.S. soldier in South Korea in 1962. He's still living there. And the really most fascinating thing about this film is that it also takes place there. The interview was done there, obviously. And I think the most fascinating aspect of this film, which after seeing some pretty incredible and inventive documentaries earlier, Chicago 10, Julian Temple's Joe Strummer. This is pretty standard stuff. I mean, you've even got Christian Slater doing
the voice
narration, which is even kind of confusing narration. And Christian Slater isn't John Hurt. So, you know, it's just he's occasionally like trails off at the end. And so it's not really effectively used. But it's still a really, really fascinating subject matter. And like I said, just being in North Korea, seeing what day-to-day life is like, and yes, where we spend our entire time in Pyongyang, which is, you know, if you're looking at that picture that was on Donald Rumsfeld's wall, that satellite picture of Korea, which is like that blotch of light that is Pyongyang and everything else is darkness. And the whole Korean peninsula is lit up except really North Korea. So yeah, we're the center of North Korean civilization. So and I guess the surprising thing about it is how normal it is. You know, kids going to school dressed in school uniforms, and buses going by, and people on bikes and mopeds, and fishing in the lake, and seeing, like, I'm waiting for, there are the statues of Kim Jong-il and his father, but you know, you kind of expected the whole city to be under martial law 24 hours a day,
right,
or something. And so that alone was interesting. And also, like I said, just this fact of this character, this man who has spent the last 45 years as, at one point, only one of four Americans living in the country, and how he spent his life at one time, you know, being a part of the party propaganda, starring in films directed by the young Kim Jong-il, and we actually see some footage of those films. And it gets more interesting at the end, too, because if you'd been reading the news, I think this was last year, maybe 2004, actually, another one of these U.S. servicemen who had been living in North Korea. He'd married a Japanese woman who had actually been kidnapped by North Korea, brought to North Korea, married this man. She ended up leaving Japan, and he ended up being reunited with her at some point. So he actually ended up leaving North Korea, and he had some awful things to say, not only about his treatment in North Korea, but also about our character, the role, maybe abusive role, this character James Joseph Drosnick had in it. So all of a sudden, everything you'd think about this character, who has become very sympathetic, it's not like you're ready to defect to North Korea yourself, but you sort of believe what he has to say about his life there not being as bad as you might imagine. And then all of a sudden you have this other narrative. It's like, well, has he been lying to us? Has he been lying to our documentarian? And you never quite get to the bottom of that. So there's an interesting tension there too. So again, is it a great documentary? I wouldn't put it on the level of either Joe Strummer or Chicago 10 in terms of inventiveness.
Yeah.
But it's the kind of thing that will probably end up somewhere on your cable box, and if you happen to come across it and the subject matter interests you, as it did me, it's absolutely worth seeing.
Okay, well, so five films, and except for one true stinker in the bunch,
right,
we would say it was, in general, a good day at Sundance.
It really
was. Okay, well, on our next show, Thursday's Sundance Dispatch, our last show until Sunday night's big Sundance kind of wrap-up, we will have reviews of Hal Hartley's Fay Grim, is a film I'm planning on seeing with Parker Posey, and Craig Brewer's movie with Samuel L. Jackson,
that's
Christina
right.
Ricci, Black Snake Moan. And we also want to point out, I know we have already, but we will have interviews with Craig Brewer,
yes,
with Eddie Rouse, who we talked about earlier in the show from Lo and Behold, and also, we're very excited,
Garth Jennings.
As we said, Garth Jennings. So those three guys, whether you hear them in Thursday's Dispatch, some of it, or all of it Sunday, we haven't really decided how we're going to use the audio yet, but we do have have interviews lined up with them that we're really excited about. One last note we want to mention, Sam. The short film that played before Lo and Behold was a movie by a pair of filmmakers, a duo called the Zellner Brothers.
Yeah.
And the film we saw was Aftermath on Meadowlark Lane. And
yeah,
we will put the link to their website in the notes for this show, where you can do a search for Zellner Brothers or Aftermath on Meadowlark Lane. And that film that we saw, Meadowlark Lane, is not available online that I can find, but other films by them are. And you heard from someone talking to in line that they're really pretty hilarious.
They're very hilarious. And yes, I thought that the short films, too, from Sundance can be found on iTunes as well. I don't know if they're charging for them.
So it might be there.
Or not. But I was laughing while Adam was describing that. It's because I was recounting some lines of dialogue from that short film.
Yeah.
Do you want to give me your line that you wanted to apply to my reviewing style or my... my rating style.
Right. There's the epic line, the most memorable line from this movie that you're going to hear on Film Spotting a lot is, "What's with the lack of consistency in your choices?" Because you can lob that one at Sam from time to time, and for me too, I'm sure. But it is a great line. But this movie starts, and we just have to put this out here that if you watch the film, you're going to start it and you're going to see that it's got three actors in it: the Zellner brothers, the filmmakers, and then this woman acting. None of them, especially the woman, are actors.
Clearly not.
You know what I mean? Like, they're not. They're not good. Right. And you hear what they're talking about and the dialogue and everything about it and the ridiculousness of it. And we were looking at each other going, "Oh my God, dear, what this is this?" But you know what? Yeah. Once you just let it go and you realize where it is going and what it's about, and we'll say what it's about. Basically, it is these two brothers asking their mom why she decided to circumcise one of them and not circumcise the other. Now, worth pointing out, in the theater, a press screening, it was us and
maybe three
or four other people.
It was the hardest.
We laughed a lot.
It was the hardest we've laughed at Sundance. I mean, as much as we loved so many moments in, say, Son of Rambo, we laughed harder in those few moments.
Yeah,
and again, you're right.
So.
It's like, is this really the subject of their short film? Really? Is that where they're going? And then all of a sudden you're just dying from laughter.
So the Zellner brothers,
good
again,
stuff.
We'll put a link in the show notes. I think that's it.
I think so,
for
too.
For this Dispatch Sam, for Film Spotting, I'm Adam Kempinar.
And I'm Sam Van Halgren. Thanks so much for listening.
This conversation can serve no purpose anymore. Goodbye.
Film Spotting is presented by the new PeerFlix. Discover, trade, connect at PeerFlix.com.